This hour on Twin Cities News Talk is presented by Sandvold Financial Group.
Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130, 103.5 FM. Justice and Drew for your Wednesday morning.
Joined now by friend of the show, lawyer extraordinaire, Jeffrey O'Brien. Good morning.
Good morning.
We actually, you and I were talking a few days ago about having you come in to talk about Nick Zerwas's protester bill.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You've got some thoughts on the First Amendment implications or lack thereof.
Right.
Regarding the protester bill that's been making a lot of headlines. So while you're in, I do want to touch on that.
Sure.
But over the course of those conversations, we learned that Trump was going to make his announcement for the Supreme Court. I said, well, let's hold off and let's get you in after that announcement is made so you can help us break it down and analyze it.
Well, and, you know, you got two different articles here, one coming out of the New York Times and another out of the Washington Post. The Kate Yalengin in the New York Times, why liberals should back Neil Gorsuch, and then the Washington Post article, Neil Gorsuch. Fortunately, both of these are coming from angles of individuals that are decidedly anti-Trump. And both coming to the same sort of conclusion that of the people that Trump put forward, this would be a good pick. I say all that in we were talking about the opposition and the rhetoric towards the anti-commentary and criticism towards Gorsuch since the announcement yesterday coming from many on the left. How much of that is just hot air? I mean, it sounds like this guy is a good pick that is able to grab, you know, not just get the right happy, but also many people on the left.
Yeah, I agree. And this is interesting. The president has really put the Democrats in a box on this one. Judge Gorsuch, you read through his background. You heard it last night during the introduction. You look at, you know, his rulings. He is eminently qualified to be on the United States Supreme Court. That being said, I mean, every person that a president puts up has been eminently qualified. The issue is going to be that we have, you know, two parties in this country, and one party has a different philosophy in terms of what they want their judges to do and act like. And the Democrats are, you know, for the Democrats to say he's unqualified is a bit ridiculous.
Right.
He's absolutely qualified. If they just come out and say, well, he's not going to vote the way we want him to, so we're going to oppose him. But here's the thing, you know, the big issue is going to be what happens with, are the Democrats going to filibuster this nominee? Will that prompt the Mitch McConnell to go to the nuclear option, as we've heard about, and take away the filibuster? You know, you need 60 votes to end to invoke cloture and end a filibuster. Republicans have 53 votes right now. There are 10 Democratic senators running for re-election in 2018 in states where 60% of the counties went for Trump. Two of them, Heidi Heitkamp of North Dakota and Joe Manchin from West Virginia, have already said they will not filibuster this nominee. So I think it's going to be really hard for the Democrat leadership to hold a filibuster together amongst their members when 10 of them are facing tough re-election battles. And that's just the reality of things.
How much does the fact that it is a conservative judge, very much in the mold of Antonin Scalia, replacing the seat that was obviously vacated by mm-hmm. Antonin Scalia, does that factor into
I think it does. And if I was advising the Democrats, I would tell them to hold their powder in the event, you know, typically a president gets about two appointees to the court. And you're looking at possibly Justice Kennedy, who was a Reagan appointee, who really is the Uber swing vote on that court right now. He's 80. He may decide during a Republican administration to retire. Justice Ginsburg, who, you know, decided that she was convinced that the Democrats were going to hold the White House and opted not to retire during President Obama's second term and let him pick her successor. She's had some health issues. She's 83 years old. So we don't know what's going to happen with Justice Ginsburg. So if I'm advising the Democrats, I tell them, you know, let the balance stay as it is. Give him the pick, you know, give the president his pick to replace Scalia. He's eminently qualified, because you don't want to, if you force the Republicans to go to the nuclear option, now you've just lost your right to filibuster the next nominee for a seat that is going to shift the balance of the court.
You've set the precedent for the next opening. And if you do hold your powder, you know, if you do just let this one go through, it gives you more credibility,
I think,
in the next battle.
Yes.
You know, it gives you no, people aren't going to react the way that they will if they try to filibuster this one by saying, oh, you're just going to do this to every nominee now.
Absolutely. And you know, and the thing, and I think we talked about this way back when we, right after the election, we were talking about the Supreme Court, what was going to happen with Trump as president. We don't know. I mean, Donald Trump is such a wild card. We don't know if, in his mind, let's say Justice Ginsburg comes up or Justice Kennedy comes up, if he's going to go back to the list of 21 or if he's going to, I mean, that was the promise was he was going to pick a replacement for Justice Scalia in the mold of Justice Scalia. Going forward, does he pick a replacement for Justice Ginsburg in the mold of Justice Ginsburg? Does he pick a replacement for Justice Kennedy in the mold of Justice Kennedy? We don't know overall where his judicial philosophy stands. We just knew that he promised to pick a replacement for Scalia that would mirror Justice Scalia. So I think that you're right, Andrew. I think that the Democrats would be wise to, you know, if they want to have the debate, absolutely, they're going to have hearings, ask the questions, but barring some, you know, amazing revelation, let this pick go through. Let there be a floor vote. Let him be confirmed and hold your fire for the next nominee in the event that he does continue in this strain and go off the list and maybe and pick one of these judges for the next slot.
Well, and it would, and again, with so much of what we've seen in the past, you know, 11, 12 days, if this were any other, you know, GOP president other than Trump, you probably wouldn't see with this pick so much opposition. When you look at his Gorsuch voting record, in the New York Times article, it says that his record suggests that he would follow the tradition of Elena Kagan, who voted against Obama when she felt part of the Affordable Care Act went too far. And he also cites in a pair of immigration cases that he ruled against attempts by the government to retroactively interpret law to disfavor immigrants. In a separate opinion, he criticized a legal doctrine that federal courts must often defer to the executive branch's interpretations of federal law, warning that such deference threatens the separation of powers designed by the framers. So again, it would appear as if he's got qualities that the left can certainly go and look at and not be too overly concerned that he's going to rule too conservatively on the bench.
I agree. And I want the statement he made last night that I was most impressed with was, if you are happy, if you as a judge are happy with every decision that you come down with, then you're a bad judge. You know, if you are happy personally with them, I mean,
right.
That's the statement of a judge that looks at what the law says and is going to operate within the boundaries of the law. And, you know, you learn in law school sometimes that there are judges that there are cases out there where the judges want to get to a result. So they come up with the law, the theory along the way to get to the result they want. Judge Gorsuch has not been a judge like that, and it does not sound like he would do that if he was on the Supreme Court. So I think he's exactly what you want in a Supreme Court justice.
Let's in the next segment, let's look at some of his more notable cases, some of his more notable opinions, and give us an idea of what we can expect from a Gorsuch.
Well, yeah, what the future of the court's going to look like, what issues could be taken up, and you know what effect that could have. We also want to get into a bit of Nick Zerwas and his bill as well. 651-989-5855 if you want to call and get in on the conversation. You can also use the hashtag TCNT on Twitter. It's Justice and Drew.
Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130, 103.5 FM, Justice and Drew, hour two for this Wednesday. Pleased to be joined by lawyer extraordinaire Jeffrey O'Brien, breaking down last night's SCOTUS announcement.
Yeah, from the Washington Post, the article writer says, I don't have any expectation that Trump will do the right thing, so I'm unexpectedly pleased that of the three judges who are apparently on Trump's short list, Judge Gorsuch is probably the best on civil liberties issues. And the one quote that I keep seeing people using from Gorsuch was his best line, they say, is, "Ours is not supposed to be the government of the Hunger Games with power centralized in one district, but a government of diffused and divided power, the better to prevent its abuse." And I think that one's getting a lot of play because of the Hunger Games reference, but it kind of equates back to him being so young and only being 49. And, you know, Trump laid it out, and I hadn't really thought about it until Trump made the comment right before Gorsuch took the podium. But, I mean, at his age, he could be serving on that seat for a long, long time.
That's exactly right. Yeah, at 49 years old, that, you know, some of these guys that are, you talk about justices here that are in their 80s, you know, you're talking about 35, 40 years where he could be on that court.
Yeah, yeah. And that, I mean, and look, for a guy like that, at least it seems to be with his cred, that could be a really good thing. And not just for those of us on the right, but, you know, as we've been talking about, regardless of Nancy Pelosi, him being a, you know, a hostile pick, right? It, you know, it could be a good thing for everybody.
Yeah, you know, and President Trump was correct last night when he said, you know, next to, you know, defending the security of the country, I do believe that selecting a Supreme Court justice is about as important a task that a president has.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, this you look at much of, you know, what the court does in terms of deciding whether or not what the Constitution, you know, allows, whether it be from the state doing something to individuals or, you know, or what have you, that this is a very important job to have one of those nine seats.
Right.
And I can remember back to when I did, you know, studied constitutional law in law school. It's a fascinating area. I mean, I practice corporate and real estate law, but still you love reading about this. You just, as a lawyer, this is just a fascinating area to study as to what these nine justices over the time and how it shifted over the years, how the philosophies have changed, and how that affects our country.
Well, just real quick, I don't want to spend a ton of time here because we have other things we want to get to on this, but so many individuals coming out and saying that, making the claim that the executive action, especially on the immigrants coming in from Syria and the seven different regions, is unconstitutional. First off, with those being temporary, does that take away the ability for a lawsuit against them because they're going away? Or do you still see the opportunity if somebody had some valid legal ground to go after Trump on those issues?
Yeah, whether they be temporary or permanent, I have to plead ignorance. I haven't studied the text of the order enough to say what, you know, my guess is that it was vetted and it was determined that there was constitutional grounds for it. That's
right.
Why presidents have, you know, legal counsel besides the attorney general. Whether it be temporary or permanent, if it violates the Constitution, it violates the Constitution. So, so in terms of the judges that issued the injunction about it, it sounds like there might have been some confusion among some federal agencies about how it was to be applied, and maybe that, you know, the way they applied it, it was incorrect. And that's so when a judge issues an injunction, what it means is that they do a weighing, like the balance of harms, what they determined is that the harm to someone that was, you know, that was possibly being blocked access to, you know, or being deported,
right,
was greater than the government's interest in protecting national security for this. So that's why they place an injunction, and then there's a later hearing on that. But that doesn't mean it decides whether or not the order was unconstitutional.
Sure.
It just means that in this case, they're going to put a pause on it until there's a hearing on the underlying issue.
Just a few minutes left while we got you. I do want to spend a couple minutes talking about the protester bill that's made a ton of headlines. Nick Zerwas is championing this. The gist of it is that if you are charged with being taking part in an illegal protest, you know, if a protest is deemed illegal and you are charged, then the and convicted, then the city, the municipality, has the option of billing you for the cost of the emergency response.
Right.
The ACLU has come out against this bill. A lot of the opposition to this bill says that it tramples on your First Amendment right to assemble, to gather, to protest, your free speech rights. I know you've got some thoughts on that. I'd like to hear those while we have a few minutes left.
You know, it's related to, you know, our discussion there a minute ago about the order. Just because you don't like something, it doesn't mean that it's unconstitutional. It's like that line, I don't think you know what that means. If you look at Nick's bill, you're right, Andrew. It talks about if you are convicted of participating in an unlawful assembly under Section 609.75, being present at an unlawful assembly under Section 609.715, or committing a public nuisance under Section 609.74. Those references are all statutory provisions in the criminal code that exists now. My understanding is nobody's challenged the constitutionality of those provisions.
Right.
So in order to even get to the kicker that Nick is proposing, where a city could, you know, go after you civilly for the costs of your illegal or your unlawful assembly, you actually have to be found to be convicted of a violation of one of those statutes. But this is one of those areas that, you know, the First Amendment isn't an absolute. And we call them time, place, and manner restrictions. The government, whether it be state or federal or city, cannot regulate the content of speech, but they can regulate in terms of the time, place, and manner in which the speech is conducted. So there's actually a four-part test that the Supreme Court has come out with. It says, does the regulation serve an important governmental interest? Is the government interest served by the regulation unrelated to the suppression of a particular message? Is the regulation narrowly tailored to serve the government's interest? And does the regulation leave open ample alternative means for communicating messages? You run Nick's bill through that test, and it passes.
Right. Well, because it's not criminalizing any currently legal behavior.
No, it's what it's simply saying is you cannot be, you know, you cannot block a freeway.
Which you already can't do.
Right.
Nick's bill doesn't change the status of that at all. It just revises the punitive measures
exactly.
Available.
It creates a civil civil remedy, mm-hmm. Say civil liability to someone who's already been convicted
right.
of an underlying criminal violation.
And it's not even a certainty that the person would suffer that civil liability because it simply gives the municipalities the option
right.
of pursuing that civil liability. I guarantee you anybody who meets all those criteria in, say, Minneapolis, it's not like the mayor of Minneapolis is going to go after him for a bill for the police response. You know,
right.
I mean, I like Nick's bill. I like the spirit behind it. But to be fair, it is more symbolic than anything else, simply designed to put that extra level of deterrent in there. Because if the decision has to come down from Mayor Betsy Hodges of whether to actually go after some of these protesters, she's never going to do that.
Right.
That's never going to happen.
Right. But at the same token, if the voters of Minneapolis or St. Paul or whoever get tired of paying for these, you know,
right.
for the cost of dealing of the extra protection to deal with when they block a freeway, then they have the option of they can make it a campaign issue. They can put it to somebody else in the mayor's office that might want to go after those. And enforce the law.
Yeah, I won't hold my breath.
No, I won't either.
Thomas at St. Paul, go ahead.
Hey, thanks for taking my call so quickly. I have a question for the lawyer gentleman vis-a-vis the applicability of the Constitution to foreign nationals that are not present on U.S. soil. So the argument from the left is that the Trump immigration moratorium is discriminatory on the basis of religion. We don't do religious tests. But I can't find anything in the Constitution that says that the people in, say, Riyadh, the Muslims in Riyadh, Saudi Arabia, or in Iran or wherever, that they enjoy constitutional protections. And I'd really like to hear some comment on that.
Well, that's an easy one, Thomas. Yeah, the Constitution protects the rights of the citizens of the United States. It does not protect – it's not designed to protect the rights of non-citizens.
There you go. Simple and easy answer.
651-989-5855. Jeffrey O'Brien, thanks for the time this morning, man.
Thanks, guys.
Appreciate it. Coming up, we're going to talk with Congressman Jason Lewis. He's been appointed to a new subcommittee. We will tell you what that is. We'll get his thoughts on that appointment and, of course, his thoughts on these first 12 days of Donald Trump and his Supreme Court pick next on Twin Cities News Talk. Twin Cities News Talk. Glad you're with us for a Wednesday morning. Justice Drew joining us for just a few minutes. Jason Lewis also. 1 hour from now, CNN host S.E. Cup will be on with us as well. Thousands protested Trump's immigration order in downtown Minneapolis yesterday.
Yeah. With the help of the teachers union.
Yeah.
Providing buses.
That was nice of them.
Yeah, they provided some buses from schools for teachers who wanted to participate.
They had. They said, we have called this protest to send a loud message of no to President Trump. And of solidarity, yeah, right. Solidarity with our immigrant sisters and brothers. Now we do have audio from Fox 9, correct? From their story,
that,
their coverage
yes,
of this last night.
That
here.
Is correct.
Yeah, listen to this.
They came by the thousands. Their anti-Trump chants echoing outside the federal building and eventually along downtown streets.
This bill does not make us safe. This bill actually puts us in harm's way.
The executive order they came to protest was signed
Friday. They're in harm's way, being in the middle of the street.
It puts a 90-day freeze on travelers from 7 countries in the Middle East and Africa, along with a 120-day hold on refugees, while the new administration revises immigration screening procedures.
Even if it's just 90 days, it says something to everyone else that is an immigrant or that isn't a white American.
No, it
Muslim
doesn't.
Americans are Americans.
No.
We can't ban a religion and pretend we're just banning from a geographic area.
Among the Minnesotans who came to protest. No,
pause it real quick. Pause
yeah,
it.
Yeah. Because what they're doing is they're banning from a geographic area. You guys are pretending.
yeah, right.
You're banning a religion.
Right.
That's what's going on. 7 countries, 6 of which are absolute failures, are absolute failed states, in states of war, overrun with jihadist Islamic terrorists, identified by the Obama administration as worthy of having additional travel restrictions placed on them.
This, both of those individuals, the first woman with the, you know, it sends a message to all other immigrants.
No, it doesn't.
It doesn't do that.
In fact, if you're an immigrant from another country, you should be like, cool.
Yeah.
It's going to shorten the line.
This is making it a lot easier. Yeah. They're just making stuff up. You're creating all these scenarios.
They're lying. They're just lying.
Yeah. More of the story.
We can't ban a religion and pretend we're just banning from a geographic area.
Among the Minnesotans who came to protest, refugees, Muslims, and first-generation U.S. citizens.
He can call it whatever he wants. You call it travel ban. Fox can call it all that, but it's a Muslim ban. I mean, we don't.
No, it's not.
Let's be honest with ourselves. This is a Muslim ban.
And you're wrong.
That you're going to prioritize Christian people that are, you know, being targeted in the Middle East. What about the Muslims?
Kaya Abdullahi is American, but his sign points to a man who has felt targeted even here at home. As Samira Adam worries that others may not get the chance she was given.
They tried to get a better life for both me and my brother, and I'm very grateful for that, for them to come over here and give us a better opportunity than the ones they might have been given.
Now, as the executive order reads, green card holders will not be included in this ban. They will be able to travel. We should also point out that the administration says that there may be some people who they will let in on a case-by-case basis.
You know, if they want to just protest anything, just protest time.
They are actually making up something to protest right now.
Yeah, exactly. If they want to protest that, just protest. Oh, it's going to take longer. They're going to have to wait.
Like, let's be real. This is a Muslim ban. It's not. You're just wrong.
And it's all temporary. If all these individuals that they're fighting for are not terrorists, right? They will get through the screening process. The only thing you could be out there going, you can just go to the streets with a bunch of clocks and protest time. Because that's all that they could be complaining about, is that it's going to take longer.
And I wish some of this anger was directed at the Obama administration while they were in power, who were complicit and in some cases even contributed to the mayhem and instability of these regions, of these states.
Right.
But that involves
now Donald Trump has to react to.
That involves a lot more of a educated look at these issues. And right now it's easier
plus
to
Obama
just.
Obama was cool, man.
Yeah, it's easier to just cool. Yell.
You know,
racist.
He was cool. He was funny. You know, he'd go on those talk shows and crack jokes and stuff.
For as frustrated as I am, because look, while the left is getting whiplash trying to catch up with all the moves by President Donald Trump, I'm getting whiplash and trying to catch up with all the stupid that we have to cover every single day. But be that as it may, I continue to say, look, let them. Because I do believe, and maybe I'm putting way too much credit on people, but considering the fact of the balance of power in the country being what it is right now, I do believe that most rational individuals, left or right, know the truth about what Donald Trump is actually doing. They may not like it, but they know the truth. That most rational people know the truth and understand what the truth is.
We're going to spend some more time on this a little bit later because our esteemed mayor, Betsy Hodges, who's running for re-election, has to position herself solidly on the far left, took part in this protest last night. We got some comments from her. But speaking of rational people, possibly the most rational man I've ever known, Representative Jason Lewis joining us now.
Good morning, sir.
Morning, guys. How are you?
I'm doing well. Congratulations, first of all. We'll start off. You are on yet another committee, appointed vice chairman of the Transportation Subcommittee. How did that come about?
Well, I mean, we've got a steering committee, and that's how the process works. And the steering committee, made up of other congressional members, looks at the landscape, and they decide where you would best fit, and then you put in your requests as well. And I think transportation and infrastructure is very important to the second district, so being on that committee was something I wanted. And of course, being on the budget committee as well as the education and workforce. So we've got some really important committee assignments so we can get to the task of working for the people of the second district if, in fact, some other members of Congress, especially in the Senate, would let us do it. I've never seen such obstructionism in my life, and I've been watching politics for decades now.
They're keeping you busy, Representative Lewis.
Oh, goodness. I mean, it's 24/7. It's like jumping on a speeding train, and I'm waiting for the train to slow down, but we're still waiting. But it is very, very gratifying, I have to say. We're actually moving the needle. We're doing what we said we would do here in the House. We're getting things done, especially on the regulatory front, trying to undo some 3,400 annual federal rules, proposed or final. That's a new federal agency rule every 2.5 hours, 24/7.
Oh, my God.
It was probably the single biggest obstacle to economic growth. And with the Congressional Review Act, we're undoing some of these things. The RAINS Act, I've introduced a bill that would also apply guidance memos to this congressional review. Because sometimes what these federal agencies do, Andrew, is they say, well, we're not certain on the rule, but we'll issue a guidance rule to comply just in case, or a guidance rule that goes along with the rule itself. And the way businesses have to look at that is, well, we've got to comply with the guidance rule or else. Mm-hmm. But it's not technically a rule. So I want that to have some congressional oversight in the spirit of separation of powers. And that's really what this is all about. And quite frankly, it's what the president's nomination for the Supreme Court last night was all about, restoring constitutional power so the people who make the law are the ones who are elected.
You know, we're all catching up with this, Trump presidency from the looking at this from an angle of usually Washington moves at a snail's pace. And Donald Trump's not doing that. He's moving swiftly. He's moving decidedly. You've sort of entered into this as this is happening, but I got to imagine that those around you who have been a part of the Washington machine for a while now have got to have a unique viewpoint on this, since this is not the way that things normally work. What's the attitude been for yourself and among your colleagues with how rapidly Donald Trump, President Trump, has been moving?
Well, look, I think this is what was expected, really, even by the veterans here on Capitol Hill. It's almost as if some of our colleagues on the Democratic side, some in the press, certainly the many who are protesting, missed November 8th, missed the last year and a half.
Right.
What did they think was going to happen? You know, there are millions of people that voted for change. It was an Electoral College landslide. The system we set up to elect the chief executive was followed. This president won a mandate with that system, and now he's moving. So did members of Congress. Now we're moving. And so you've got a group of people on the Hill and elsewhere who say, well, we don't care about our other Americans. We don't care what they say. We're going to do what we want, and you're going to listen to us. So, look, what you've got to do is make certain that you do what you said you were going to do during the campaign, whether you're a president or member of Congress, and let the chips fall. That's what we were elected to do, and I'm glad to see we're actually – how many times have we heard, well, the Congress doesn't get things done. Nothing happens in Washington.
Right.
We've got gridlock. We've got to move. So now we're doing things according to how the election results came out, and people are upset. Well, you know what? That's the way the system works.
Well, on that note,
as one famous president once said, I've got a phone and a pen.
Yeah. Right. On that note, I know there has been some questions raised, and granted, he's only been president 12 days. I mean, so everybody needs to take a bit of a breath. But, you know, are you getting a sense of where Congress is when it comes to delivering some of the bigger things that people want to see, which is, you know, a replacement of the Affordable Care Act and other items of really working with the president?
Well, the first thing Congress needs to do, especially on the Senate side, is confirm the president's appointees.
Yeah.
Now, we're all gearing up for a battle with Judge Gorsuch, who is eminently qualified, maybe the most eminently qualified jurist in the country for this particular position. It won't change the balance of the court. This is clearly in the mold of Antonin Scalia, who is respected by all his colleagues. But yet we're hearing there were signs on the steps of the Supreme Court that said oppose with a blank space, and once Gorsuch was the nominee, they wrote in his name.
Oh, everybody's standing by with a magic marker.
Oh,
exactly.
That should be a parody. That should be a parody meme. It shouldn't be a reality.
Hilarious.
Wow.
Yeah, well, that is a good point. I mean, do some of these folks really want to be taken seriously? But the larger point is, whatever happened to the concern about obstructionism?
Right.
So until we get Dr. Tom Price at HHS. Until we get some of these, Mick Mulvaney at OMB is a friend of mine and a real deficit hawk, until we get these nominees in place, how can you possibly complain when you're holding up the system? Well, you know what? They really don't care about the system. They don't care about obstructionism. They don't care about getting things done. All they want to do is score political points. And I think the American people, and certainly from what I hear from my constituents, are tired of that.
I'd like to get your thoughts while we just have a couple of minutes with you on the nomination of Neil Gorsuch last night. This is a pick that has a lot of conservatives very, very pleased, has, you know, alleviated a lot of the concerns that a lot of conservatives had, you know, the ones that specifically sort of held their nose and voted for Trump based on the Supreme Court vacancies. Your thoughts on Gorsuch?
It should make conservatives and liberals very, very happy. Here's a guy who is the epitome of tolerance. He says, look, I don't think that the court should handle political matters, so we're going to defer the political questions of the day to the political branches because those people are held accountable. They're called elections. We're going to defer to the states the most vexing of issues so states can figure it out according to the wishes of their citizens and their residents. That is the epitome of diversity and tolerance, something I thought liberals were in favor of, right up until they get a Republican Supreme Court nominee, I guess. Gorsuch simply believes, like Montesquieu, like the federal, you know, if you take a look at where the Hamilton came down on the judiciary, all patterned after Montesquieu and all of the great writings of through the Enlightenment, they believe that the courts should settle disputes according to the law. Whether they like the outcome or not, they don't make the law. They have to settle disputes according to the law. And that's what Gorsuch was talking about last night when he said, look, if you like all the decisions you're making, you're probably not a very good judge.
Right.
Their personal preferences shouldn't come in. So I don't know why, quite frankly, anyone would be opposed to that sort of judicial philosophy.
Well, and it looks like, I mean, hopefully he moves through quickly and we don't end up with a situation where the opposition simply tries to hold it up just for the sake of holding it up. And we were seeing some of that yesterday in some of the commentary from Warren and Pelosi.
When President Clinton took office and when President Obama took office, their first two Supreme Court nominees in the first part of their first term were without a filibuster, nominated and confirmed by the Senate.
Yeah,
that's a good reminder. Thank you, Congressman Jason Lewis. Appreciate that.
Yeah, and thank you for your time this morning. Always enjoy
Thanks,
having
John.
You on the show.
Voice.
All right, hope we get a chance to talk to you next week.
Always a pleasure.
All right, coming up, The mayor joined 5,000 at a Minneapolis rally against the immigration travel ban. You know, they were shutting down streets downtown. Can we charge them yet for that? Just out of curiosity. We'll get to Minneapolis Mayor Betsy Hodges, her comments. Also, Minneapolis council member, Alondra Canoe. She kind of got a little bit of trouble. She was defying something at City Hall. We will tell you what that was. And CNN host Essie Cupp will join us at 8:35 here on Twin Cities News Talk.